do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Today, my guest is Maria Rodriguez. She is a paleontologist out of the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, and for the last couple of years, she's been part of the National Park Service. Now, if Maria's story isn't the epitome of what it means to be committed, to have passion, to have integrity and perseverance, then I don't know what is. Because if there's anything that this conversation showed me, is that it's never too late to get started on what you love. And that was the case with her, and I walked out of this conversation feeling inspired and ready to take on the world. It's important to continue pushing ourselves and to just push through the fear that we occasionally feel with changes in our life. I don't want to give any more away, so I hope you guys tune into the conversation, and I hope that you feel the same way I did when I finished this up. With that being said, today's music is Samba de la Muerte with their song Fast. They're a group based out of France. I know this is going way farther than what I normally do with local music, but at the end of the day, it's music. If you feel it, then you know it's good, you know, and why not open up your horizons to something outside of the immediate circle that you have around you? So go check it out. You can find their music on YouTube. You can find their music on Spotify. So check them out. Show your love. Without much further ado, I hope you guys enjoy. What's up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Today I have a very special guest. I have Maria Rodriguez. She is a paleontologist. What is up, Maria? Thank you for making the time.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you again for making the time. I don't know if your plans are like out for the public to know, but I know you're going to be traveling soon. So again, I mentioned it earlier, but thank you for making the time to fit me into that schedule.
Absolutely. I mean, the more I can spread about paleontology and how it fits in with my East LA upbringing, then I'm hoping someone out there is listening and, you know, say I can inspire them in some way.
Yeah, of course. And then that's the interesting part, because for the most part, I don't know too many people here in the East LA area, in the hood, that necessarily went to go ahead and pursue a career with fossils and just things that are consisting of the past. Now, for yourself, for people just to kind of get an idea of who you are, and give us a little bit of background, like, when did you first start being fascinated by these things, like, you know, that you wanted to do it for a living?
It took a long time. So originally, I am from Cudahy, California. I grew up in a totally immigrant community. Everyone spoke Spanish, and my parents are both Salvadoran immigrants, and they came here in the 70s. So first generation Salvadoran American, and proud to say that. So I did not discover paleontology until my last semester of college. I went to a high school named Elizabeth Learning Center, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yep, I'm an alumni.
Class of 2007. And as you know, there's only like two fields that they encourage you to follow, either technology or the health academy. And so that created sort of a limiting belief that I can only do either. Mm-hmm. But I love it. I love the school. It was great. It was awesome. Still have a lot of friends from there. So I went to community college. I went to East LA College, got an associate's, and transferred over to Cal State Dominguez Hills. And from there, I was an earth science major. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I fell in love with oceanography, and I made this decision that I was going to go into oceans and study oceans. But in the last semester of college, one of my professors, Judy King Rundle, told me about an internship at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County.
Oh, nice.
And I finished all my classes, and all I needed is what was a filler, a class, an elective. And I asked around if I could take it. And sure enough, they allowed me to take the internship and give me credit for it. And I thought, it's one semester, like, what the heck? And I'll get to play with fossils. And so I started working with the Department of Invertebrate Paleontology. So that's all snails, mollusks, clams.
Yep. Things with no spines, right?
Right. Yes. Okay. And I fell in love. I fell in love with old stuff. With stuff that wasn't around anymore, and that cemented the passion that I wanted to do it. Like, I forget oceanography. I still like yeah. oceanography, but I decided then that it was then. And then, and I mean, I was 20. What was it? I was 26 when I was during my last semester, It was then that I decided that I wanted to further be in this field of paleontology.
Nice.
So I completed the internship, and after I graduated, fortunately, my boss, Dr. Austin Hendy, and collections manager, they offered me a part-time job. So not only was I going to continue working with the museum, but I was going to get paid for it. Which was nice.
Yeah, of course, of course.
And then from then on, I said, I changed from oceanography to let me study fossil invertebrates. I love trilobites now today are my most favorite, well, still are my favorite fossil, but I began to expand. Like there's many species out there that anybody can study. So I just started applying to, there's this great program called Geoscientists in the Parks, and it allows college students and recent graduates to work at a national park and do whatever field they choose, biology, ecology, archaeology, anything. And so I was sticking with paleontology. I applied to a whole bunch of them, and a few offered me internships, but the one that really struck me and what I was excited about was this 3-month internship with Glen Canyon National Recreation Area here in Page, Arizona, where I live yeah. now. So the 3-month internship turned into a 6-month internship, and that turned into a year, and I've been here now for 4 years.
Whoa, dang. All right.
I moved from small Cudahy, California to rural Page, Arizona, where the only traffic you encounter are cows on the road.
Big difference from LA for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm okay with this kind of traffic. I hate freeways.
Yeah, right.
So I have been holding different positions with the National Park Service. I started as a paleontology assistant, then I moved to museum curator, museum technician, park ranger, and I just have performed various jobs, but all of them circled back to paleontology. And the most of the paleontology readily available here in Glen Canyon are dinosaur trackways. Mm-hmm. So I went from spineless bodiless creatures to dinosaurs, and not the actual body fossils. We're talking about their traces, what they left behind. So I began studying. I was mentored by a lovely, wonderful paleontologist from the area, Andrew Milner, Dr. Martin Lockley, a lot of guys who took me in and just were helping out this little East LA girl learn about dinosaurs. And sure enough, I've been recently accepted to the University of Alberta, and I'll be starting the fall semester there in two weeks, actually. So I'm, you mentioned me moving. I'll be moving up to Canada for 2 years.
Wow, it's going to be, I'm assuming Arizona has been hot the last 4 years. I mean, it's more hot than cold, right?
Bad. It's ridiculous. It is like 107 degrees is normal temperature.
Oh my God. No. And now you're going to go to Canada, which is going to be just quite the opposite.
I know. It's I don't know. And I'm from Los Angeles. Like, how am I going to do in the snow? Like, come on. I'm going to die.
Yeah, well, let's hope you don't. All right. But it's still cool that you get to, at this point, you're traveling, you know, from place to place. You're seeing this whole variety of what Earth is. And I mean, just a speck of it still, in a sense, you know, but like you're traveling, just doing what you love.
Yeah, and I mostly attribute it to me saying yes. Like, mm-hmm. I know there's people who don't take advantage of the opportunity. When something is offered them, they're scared. Like, how can I leave my family behind in Cudahy? How can I leave all my friends? How can I leave my job? But saying yes to these job offers and internships and working your ass. I don't know if you can cuss in this podcast.
You can say whatever you want.
Working your ass off obviously helps a lot, but like just being open to the idea. And now I'm on my way up to Alberta. And the funny thing is my thesis is here. It's based here in Lake Powell. So I will be coming back to do my research here, but I'll be doing all my writing and everything in Alberta.
Wow. Yeah. Crazy. Like, do you think with what you've experienced over the last couple of years, like, has it like grown like a new appreciation for each place that you're visiting or that you're in? Like, you know, I like going to national parks or camping or road tripping when I can, you know, but of course it's different from going to observe and doing research in these areas and then looking for just things that are millions and millions of years old, you know. And but when I go there, I can still learn or I can still appreciate like the rock formations or like be fucking mind blown about how certain things are made. And then where did I go? I think I went to Zion, and in certain spots there's like, I forget what it was, but I think there's just like traces of old civilizations, like humans.
Yeah.
I haven't seen dinosaurs yet, like the tracks or anything.
Close to Zion is like only a few hours away. If you came by this way, like you can walk down to the lake and just, there you go, there's a dinosaur track right there. And
just there?
Like you could be swimming and then get out of the water and there's a trackway there. It's so, you were so close. I mean,
man, I'm gonna have to go back and check it out at some point, because honestly, I know a lot of people are like, I like to quote this movie, A Bug's Life, because they at some point they say it's just a rock. But you know, I don't know. I find them like, there's just something about it. Like everywhere I go, I'm just looking at the mountains or the hills, and I'm just like, holy shit! Like this is crazy how this, we're just part of this. You know, we're in a moment in time where these things have been here for ages and eras. You know.
Right. And one has to make the effort and explore and get out of Cudahy. Had I not done that, I wouldn't have discovered my love for dinosaur trackways. But one has to be open to explore, be open to learning new things. My mom still is in Cudahy. I actually just came back visiting her, she's scared. Obviously, she wants me home. She wants me closer. Yeah. She's scared of me going to Canada. But she's my biggest support system. And she's my biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
Had I thought of it too much, like, I can't leave my mom. I can't leave my friends. I can't leave, you know, like, I would not have been able to discover my true passion, which is what I'm going to study. And I hope to study for the rest of my life.
I mean, I'm sure, like, it may seem like it was easy for you to kind of get up and move, but I'm sure you had the struggles fears and the rejection.
Are you freaking kidding me? Hell no. I'm actually in a field that is mostly made up by older white males. And I've seen it. I've walked into plenty of rooms before where I'm the only person of color there, and I look strange. I feel strange, but I've been in enough situations where I can take that. How do I say? I can take that weird setting, that weird position that I'm in, and to use it to my advantage and meet people. And that's how I network. It's like, who is this brown person?
Yeah.
With Maria de Jesus Rodriguez name tag. I start meeting people, and I don't let fear overcome my my goals. I could have been easily scared by not accepting this internship with Glen Canyon. And, you know, for 3 months, it was going to be just living in a place where, like I said, it's 7,000 people, permanent residents here, small town. And I'm coming from Los Angeles. Like, there's a difference between big city life to there is, one Walmart and one Safeway, and you could choose one or the other. And they don't like it's, and I have to drive 2.5 hours to get my oil change. You know, it's a drastic change. And I could have easily been scared and said, no, like, no, thank you. But I went for it. I didn't let fear. And the same thing now. I have a great job. I work for the Bureau of Reclamation at Glen Canyon Dam, and I have great friends here. My family's still mostly in Los Angeles, but I have a great life here. Like, however, it's not my ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. I need to get my master's. That is my thing. I need to do it before, you know, I just have to achieve that goal. And I think I'll be happy then. Like, I'm, I think I'm good with school. I after that, but, and I'm moving to a different country. So of course I'm scared. Of course I'm terrified. And like, what if I don't like it? What if I fail? What if I can't keep up with, what if I'm dumber than the rest of, you know, the rest of the class there? But I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm also stubborn, and I have that orgullo in me that I'm like, they're not going to kick my ass. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it. And that's it. Like, this Salvadoran from Caray, California is here wearing her Cortez and her hoop earrings, and better watch yourself. Just kidding.
No, I love that. I love that because it's empowering, you know. It's like, you hear it, and it's easy for people to, like, you know, in any small town to kind of think that is what there is, you know. And it's, unless you start hearing like stories that are actually relatable to you, or seeing people from your community start pursuing bigger things, it's when you kind of like take a moment to reflect and you're like, whoa, I can do this, you know.
Like, right. And even like, I on my Instagram, I share pictures and videos of where I am, of all my adventures, what I'm doing next, and what I'm discovering, what I'm researching. And a lot of people from like from Karehe, from my hometown, can't believe that places like this exist. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of my mom, because she grew up in San Salvador, and she immigrated in 1977. And when I took her to Grand Canyon, this lady, this like old school Salvadoran woman, to look at the Grand Canyon, to her, it was what? But like, she's super religious, but she would never say this out loud, but I can tell it was like, what the fuck? What is this? Is this a fucking painting? Like, where did you bring me? And I was, and I tried explaining to her what it was, because we're dealing with also someone with a fifth grade education. She did not finish middle school. She just went to school enough to learn how to read and write. And then she wasn't able to continue school because she had to drop out to support her family. So I talk about my mom a lot because she's my biggest inspiration, but there's people like her who cannot even imagine or fathom what is available out there. And they don't, because fear keeps them from exploring, from going out. And it's sad and it sucks. And I hope, like, when people see me, and I've heard like my friends' daughters and tell me, like, I really enjoy your pictures of dinosaurs and the trackways and everything. And it inspires me to keep going, to go, like, because I didn't have that growing up. I didn't have a brown person. And I mean, I discovered paleontology when I was 26 years old. I didn't have that growing up. So I hope that I can be that person to somebody else who is listening, who is watching, who sees me on features in the National Park Service websites and sees, like, hey, you can do it. If she can do it, I can do it. And you just have to work your ass off. But yes, you can do it for sure.
Props to that, because it's easy for us to just be like, nah, I can't do it, and give up. And it's sad, because I've fallen victim to that. And I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have fallen victim to that kind of mentality. But again, like, it's one thing that I've learned in the last couple of years myself too, is just being open to those opportunities. Like how you mentioned when you first started doing the whole internships, you just kept saying yes, you know. I'm sure you didn't know like the full outcome of it. Of course, you're not like a, you know, fortune teller, but you took the opportunities to say, all right, I'm going to see where this goes. And it just kept opening doors for you.
For sure. And it's crazy. And I'm very grateful and thankful for mentors that I have, because like I said, they were the first of my kind. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. They were for the first of my kind to be, you know, next to them and asking them questions and like, how do you do this? Why do you think this? And why, you know, and so I'm excited for this next venture, but I'm very proud of what I've accomplished so far.
Yeah. Do you think, like, kind of unrelated to the whole thing, but do you think like that mentality was set upon you, like, growing up? Is that something that kind of was like pursued by, you know, your mom, your family around you?
No, I'm not going to say that it was encouraged. Because it's something that wasn't encouraged upon them. So like my peers, my uncles, my aunts, they didn't go to college. They didn't go to the high school. Was a privilege to attend in their home country. So coming here, they would have been proud of me had I, you know, made shift lead at Jack in a Box. Like, and I'm okay, and that's great. Like, I'm not shitting on those jobs. Like, you fucking be the best shift lead ever. But it was my desire for more just made me it wasn't enough that I got my associates. It wasn't enough that I got my bachelor's, and it's still not enough. I need to get my master's before I feel like I kind of sad to say that before I feel fulfilled with my life. Like, I just need, I've had the experience. I've worked as a museum curator for the Park Service. I've worked as a head paleontologist for Glen Canyon National Rec Area, but it wasn't enough. But the good thing is that with me explaining to my mom that it is my love, it is my passion. She's fully supportive. She doesn't understand it. Obviously, like I said, she has this fifth grade education, like how, like, and she's really Catholic, so she still has this mindset that the world is only 7,000 years old.
Yeah,
and that's okay. I respect her belief. I'm not gonna try to persuade any different. But me explaining what dinosaur is, what a fossil is, and how and what why it matters, and it's to an old school Salvadoran woman who's nearing 70, it's pretty hard. But because she sees how well I have, what I've accomplished, and she sees me how passionate, how excited I am about these things. She is fully supportive. Like I said, she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand why I'm going to Canada. She's like, there's schools here, Maria. Like, there's schools in Los Angeles.
Why are you going so far?
Yeah, ¿por qué te vas tan lejos? Like, no, it's just, it's one of the top paleontology programs in the world. So when they offered me a full ride, that's when I couldn't say no. I cannot say no to that opportunity. So like I said, I have a great life here, great job. I mean, I've been working for the federal government for the past 4 years. But I'm leaving that to, you know, pursue my dream. And yes, I'm scared. Like I said, I'm scared. In 2 weeks, I will be on my way to Canada, but I'm fucking gonna do it. I'm gonna
stand. That's awesome.
I've been crying the entire time. Like, oh my God, I know what I'm doing. But I'm gonna fucking.
No, it's good. You're hungry. You're hungry for it, you know? And I think that is the key right there. Like, regardless of what all the other stuff that you're feeling, you're gonna go through it, but it's that passion and that hunger that you have that's just gonna push right through it, you know. And that's cool.
thank you. And I'm the first in my family to have gotten a bachelor's, and first that will be getting a master's. So to them, it's like, you're 32, Mari. Like, they call me Mari. You're 32, Mari. Like, where are your children? Where is your husband? I'm like, listen, I got too much on my plate to worry about all that.
Yeah, for sure.
The way I shut them up, and not in the mean way, I just say, like, I'm too focused on my studies. And that's when they're like, okay, well then. You're different. You're far different than all your cousins, but we support you. We are here if you need anything. So having that support system really helps.
Yeah, no, it's huge. Of course, it's like some people unfortunately don't have that family support and make things harder. People still get it done, but of course, having it is just it's like a load off of you in a sense. You know, like
absolutely, yeah. So I'm very fortunate that I have that. And yeah, my mom's my biggest cheerleader. She, like I said, she's like confused. She's like, why Canada? There's dinosaurs here. I'm like, no, not really, mom.
Yeah, she's like, but I love you. Okay, I understand. Yeah. I'll deal with it.
She's so cute. She's like, she was just here not too long ago for a week and a half. So coming to Page, Arizona. She's like, what is this? Like, this is it's ridiculous. It's so lonely. Like, where's the traffic? Where are the cops? Where's like the helicopter flying around? I'm like, no, mom, there's bats at night.
Oh my God. All these. No, but it's, I mean, I'm assuming it's just like open scenery, right? I mean, I haven't been there myself close to the area, but
8 miles, hundreds and hundreds on a clear day. You can see hundreds and hundreds of miles of horizon. And at night you see all the stars and satellites. It's beautiful out here. So there's a reason why I stayed and
Now, do you have like recommendations for people who are like, for people who come and ask you like, hey, Maria, where do you think I should go? All this stuff. Like, do you have any specific places that you personally think people should go and see?
Well, I mean, everyone knows Horseshoe Bend. I feel like almost everyone has heard about it or gone to Horseshoe Bend, and that's the biggest attraction here in Page, Arizona. It's nice. It's great. But like, I'm very biased. Yeah. I go straight for the rocks and the fossils, and it's crazy how within the span of like 20 miles you can go from the Permian to the Jurassic to it's ridiculous how many fossils you can encounter in just this one area in Glen Canyon National Recreation Area. It's so I'm biased. Obviously, I'm gonna go look for fossils. I'm gonna look for trackways, but that's it. Like, go swimming on the lake, and right now the water is really we're in a massive drought. The Glen Canyon Dam only has a 35 feet buffer zone before the dam is inoperable. So we need, it's the lake levels are absolutely low. The good news, that's the bad news. The good news is that as the water, my boss is going to kill me by saying this. The good news is that as the water, as the lake levels continue to decrease lower, more trackways are being exposed. So that's where Maria de Jesus Rodriguez comes in with her thesis, looking for those trackways and documenting them, because a lot of them haven't been exposed since Lake Powell started filling in. And that was back in 1966. So those trackways have not seen the light of day since decades ago. So I would be one of the first ones to go back out there and describe them and take pictures of them and write about them. And so I'm excited about that. But yes, I mean, the lake is, you know, drying up, but it's good for me.
Yeah, you get your job longer. No, but like, so when you go out onto these sites, like, what is it that you're looking for exactly?
So the trackways that I'm mostly focusing on are on the boundary of the Kayenta and Navajo stratigraphic layer. And we're talking about roughly 250 million years ago. That boundary is the late Triassic / early Jurassic. And that is when this, in the most simple way possible, without making it too complicated, I'm studying the traces they left behind. And from those traces, we can learn about their locomotion. We can learn how fast they were walking, how they sat to potentially drink water, how they walked, what was their stride, how they moved. And you can't learn that from discovering a body fossil. You see body fossil, you see bones, but you just see they're buried. That's it. Like, you know, their anatomy, how they were built, but you don't know how they moved. And so from studying all these traces, we can learn how they lived, how they moved in packs and hunted. And, you know, it's,
damn. Okay, yeah, so it's a lot of, it's kind of like an investigative work, right? Like, you got to do all this, like, put pieces together, figure out exactly what's going on.
Right, and this is all in theory too, because we can build a story around why there's a trackway going up northwards and this other trackway going westward. It's all theories, but we can learn a lot about traces, dinosaur trackways.
When you mentioned earlier about the invertebrates, like, when you started going into that specific field, was it like just fossils that you were looking at too, or you were looking for similar things like how they lived?
No, when I was working with the museum with invertebrates, I was working with fossils, but it was mostly like cataloging them and drawing labels and numbering them, counting them, like museum work.
Yeah.
And we did go, we often went to do field work and collect. We went to Santa Barbara once, Salt and Sea, and we collect buckets full of mollusks and oysters and gastropods. And we would take them back and just sort them, wash them, see what we found. And make a new, you know, it's museum work. So the difference from that job to when I transferred over here to Glen Canyon was that I was, all the work was retrieved from the field and taken back, written about and embedded into this big paleontological database that the National Park Service holds and entering it. So a researcher or college or a master's student like myself wants to study it, there it is. And we know coordinates, we know where they are. And and we can tell them what we found. And it's very vague data collecting. It's like, find what you can, like, don't study it very thoroughly. Just collect what you can. Take a picture, take notes where it is, and bring it back and put it in the database. But not anyone, there's not a lot of people who will go out there to study them, to actually make time to write about them. And that's where I come in, and would like to write about them. And that's what I'm, that's the whole reason why I'm going to grad school is so I can come back to where I am now and write about research
on about them.
Especially the trackways that haven't been exposed for decades and nobody has seen them. And so I'm excited to see what I found, what would I find in the future.
Nice. I'm sure that, like, when you talk about this kind of stuff, you may get questions about, like, the whole Jurassic Park related things, right?
Yeah, Jurassic Park. Yeah, not too long ago somebody asked me, you must like Jurassic Park. I'm like, you know what? Growing up, I grew up in a really poor household. Yeah. Like, we were poor, so movies, we hardly ever went to the movies. I saw Jurassic Park when I was like in high school, I think. And even then it was like, okay, that's cool. And yeah, they're cool movies. I'm not gonna shit on them, but it's kind of ridiculous.
No, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy too, because I remember first watching it, and I think a couple of years ago they came out with the or there was evidence or something that, or what was it, certain dinosaurs had feathers, like raptors or something. I was like, no, they didn't. I believe Steven Spielberg, you know, they're just fucking scary.
It's that venom too. And no, that's not a thing.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was not a thing.
Yeah. I mean, and on top of that, like when you go ahead and go out to these places, you say you guys write about where they're located so somebody else can come in and search for them. Now, is it difficult? I mean, when somebody in the public just kind of stumbles upon them and they're like, holy shit, found dinosaur tracks.
Visitor information and what they find is our main source of finding these things, because Lake Powell is huge. Mm-hmm. It is a ginormous lake and has all these canyons, and people rent their boats. They bring their fishing boats, their houseboats, and they get out their kayaks. Then they go out on the lake and they beach and they're suntanning and they're, you know, whatever they're doing, drinking their beer. And they're like, oh shit, what is that? That looks like a bird track. Yeah. That looks like, what is that? And there's more. And so what we used to encourage visitors is, if you see something, let us know, because we need your help. We need your help to find these things. Mm-hmm. We don't know where they're at. We have only a few people who can go out there. And because the lake being so huge, we can't cover everything. Yeah. So we need your eyes. If you find something, you let us know. And so that's visitors would often email me and say, hey, do you have this on file? Here's a picture. This is where I found it. And then I would go into the database and see if we found it. If it was something new, then we would make a trip to go there and document it, mm-hmm. and take pictures and survey it and add it to the database. So we rely a lot on the public to give us the information, because at one point I was the only person in the entire 1.25 million acres of Glen Canyon to work on these fossil trackways or any fossils found. And so I only have two eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
I was limited with like where I can go and what I can do, how long I can stay out there. So I needed the help of people to tell me where they were. And that's what we used to, I did create an event. There, every year, the National Park Service has an event, the National Fossil Day. And one year I made it here in Glen Canyon, and I just, there were speeches or toys and games, whatever. But the main point was, if you see something, you have to say something, because we need your help. We need your help finding things. And what, how I enticed them was telling them that if they found something, they can name it. So to have a site named after you, if you, Eddie, like went to Lake Powell and you're like, hey, I found a new track site, like, and you have the privilege to, you have, you can name it, and we can name it after, like, people name it after, like, their wives or themselves, whatever, but like, to have a site named after you under the National Park Service paleontological database was huge. So people are often like, go out and be like, I found it, oh my god.
Yeah, put my name on it.
I know like I have a trackway named after myself. Like,
yeah, right. That's, yeah,
that's a huge honor, you know.
Now, for just for my understanding, these trackways or these prints that you ultimately find, I'm just being like, you know, being a 2-year-old right now. Hey, how do these form? Like, how do these stay there for so long without, I mean, if it's the elements that are continuing, like, how do they stay, like, preserved?
If they're exposed for a very long time, mm-hmm. they erode away, obviously. They're carved away by water, by wind, rain. Most of them were buried almost right away. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a time where it was a very wet area. It would rain. There was a lot of oases, a lot of beaches at the time, a lot of meandering rivers, and dinosaurs get thirsty. So dinosaurs would often go to their water source, have a drink, and very quickly that print that they left behind was quickly buried, was quickly filled by something, by sand, and that was then buried, and it was buried, cemented, and it was luckily preserved for a very, very long time. It isn't until it's now the uplift or by erosional factors, water, wind, and other stuff, it helps erode away and cut away at the rock, and then you have this trackway exposed. So it takes time for them to actually come to the surface, but when it does, like, you can see details, you can see their nubs, they're on the, you can see claw marks on these trackways. Like, some of them are so pristine and so detailed that it's like, holy shit, like, just imagine that shit clawing at your face, like the claw just,
yeah, you're straight, you have no face.
Like, I do not want to fuck with that. But like, it's, and it's amazing what you can see from those, from that trackway. And of course, that's, you know, that's not things that are preserved in fossils. You don't see like the padding on their claws. You don't see,
right? Yeah.
You but then with trackways, you see how they walk. You see how big their claws were. You see their footprints, how big they were.
What's the craziest thing you found, like, in terms of you know, you went out there, you were just mind blown?
God, one of the very, it's not the craziest thing, but there's a few, there's a track called Odozoan, that's very rare here on Lake Powell. It's a 4-digit track that was made by a Proceropod. And that is the great, 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 great ancestor of the big long necks herbivores, the Ceropods that you see in Jurassic Park. The, you know, the ones that were just gentle and just eating. But during that time, they were small guys. They were tiny. They were evolving. It was just, took them millions of years later to actually get to that size. And that's why they call it the age of dinosaurs, because they overruled, they ruled the entire world. But at that time, the time period that I'm focusing on is when they were just starting out. So they weren't as big. And so that's a cool one to find all the time. And because it's rare, it's so rare. But I couldn't tell you. Like, they're all so awesome. Yeah. All the tracks are awesome.
Now, like, do you ever speculate, like, what, you know, we're humans now. At some point, millions and millions of years ago, or from today, paleontologists from that time are going to find from now, like, a bunch of, I don't know. I sometimes trip out, like, what are we leaving behind ourselves, you know?
Trash.
A bunch of trash. You know, now we see certain places, like we see handprints or, you know, from, again, tribes from a long time ago and all this stuff.
Right, yeah.
And we think, like, holy shit, this is crazy. This is from 2,000 years or I don't know, whatever. I'm bad with time frames. Let's just say a million years ago. Whatever. Point is, you saw a print and you're, like, all amazed and fascinated at it, you know? And I just like to wonder sometimes, like, damn, like, I wonder what if they're even going to find this fascinating since we're just, you know, same kind of features, right, type of sense.
And it's the same ideology with dinosaurs. Like, we don't know if, like, your feet look different than mine, you know, like, yeah, you have longer toes or you have, like, does that mean you were a different species? You were a different kind of human, or were we the same kind of human just in different form? So there's a variety of tracks that give us different information, but just like you mentioned, later on in the future, millions of years now, if something happens and humans are evolved once again, and they're like, who was Maria?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just, no, I know. Of course, it can get crazy, you know. But no, it's fascinating that you love to do that. And again, I think a lot of people it will benefit from being able to explore a little bit about the past and just, you know, be present and with something in front of you like that, because it really could take your breath away, you know. Especially if you're looking at something and you try to fully understand that, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I like telling people that I like dealing with dead stuff. Like, give me the I don't want anything living. I'm good with just studying rocks.
And I mean that's basically your office. So I mean, every day is like a badass view, you know?
Yeah, that's my office, right? Yeah, that's like, okay, I'm gonna go to my office and take my rock hammer and my field books and I'll be back. Yeah, so it's a different kind of office, but it's exciting. Yeah. It's very exciting. I'd rather play outside. And I get that as a little girl, I was always wanting to go and roll around in dirt and just be, so my mom would hate it. Like, ¿por qué te ensuciaste? I just washed those clothes. Like, it was just dirty knees all the time.
She should have known since then. She should have picked it up.
I know. Like, listen, mom. And then now, I told her too recently, I was like, you're the one that would always kick me out of the house and just say, like, vete a jugar. Me haces mucho estorbo.
Yeah, now she's like, damn it.
Like, you bug me too much. Go play. Go out and play. And so I would go off and play. And like, I didn't want to be inside. And I wanted to go play and dig and, yeah, make whatever, I don't know, hold. I don't know.
Nah, so. Well, I mean, we're at that time here, Maria. But thank you so much for sharing your story. I love it.
Thanks for inviting me.
I really do hope people pick up on the idea of just overall just pushing yourself, you know, through the passions that you got and really pursuing it. Because to me, you radiate that energy that it's just you're hungry and you just want it, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. It's like I said, it's scary, but let's not let fear stop the desire to explore, to learn new things. Like, yes, I'm fucking scared. I'm terrified of moving again and to a place where I don't know anyone. Like, I have no family in Canada. I have no friends. Like, I'm starting my life over again, but it's for the better. It's to make myself proud overall, but like, see my mom, like, holy shit. Like, you know, that's the reason I crossed the border, is for my daughter to accomplish her goals and be happy with, you know, waking up and saying like, oh yeah, she's gonna go to her dream job. And what, yeah, so I hope people continue to explore. And you come to and go check out some dinosaur
trackways. I'm going to check it out. Yeah, here. Next time I make a road trip, I'm going to go check it out. I'll be like, Maria, give me the coordinates.
Yeah. You can't tell anyone because you're dead.
Oh, shit. I'm going to be fossil. They're going to be studying me.
Government. Yeah, it's government information.
I'm just kidding, government. Please. I still got to do a lot more of these episodes. It'll be a secret conversation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if people want to follow your adventures, if you're okay with people just being like, hey, I want to see where Maria's at. Let's see where she's studying. Is there any place that you want to like share or anything?
Yeah. I mean, they can see my adventures on Instagram, which is @ZiggyStarsDust.
There you go, people. If you want to find some cool formations and all that stuff, just keep it professional. Don't do anything crazy. Please, because this is social payment representing.
Yeah, I know. I'll send them your way and be like, look at what you did.
But again, Maria, thank you for making the time. And I hope everything keeps going as steady as possible with you. And
thank you. We'll
keep updated.
Thank you so much. Yeah, maybe we'll do another one while I'm in Canada. And I tell you, don't follow your dreams. Don't come to
Canada. It's going to be the opposite. Part 2. All right, Maria. Well, thank you so much again. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your night. Okay.
Thank you.
Catch you later.